This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
This is Michael Gineau with Insight to Israel and Hershey's for Heroes. And I want to thank all the guys at America's Web Radio who bring the truth of the Jewish state to the grassroots of the United States. Insight to Israel has been on the air for almost 2 years now, and we are in the top 20% out of 26,000 radio shows heard in the United States, in Europe, in Israel, and in Australia. And I'm sure, I would venture to say, there's probably some Asians listening somewhere to Insight to Israel. And so I want to thank all the guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all that you do in allowing Insight to Israel to tell the truth about the greatness of this country. I also want to say thank you to everyone who is a participator and not a spectator in Hershey's for Heroes. Just recently, I got 1,000 chocolate bars in the mail with notes on them to the soldiers. We love you, we pray for you, and we stand with you. And I get invited to go to the bases to talk to the soldiers from a non-Jewish American perspective of why Americans will always stand with you. That we have a covenant and a bond through our Constitution and Bill of Rights with the Jewish people. Because if it had not been for them receiving Torah from Hashem, we would not have a Constitution and Bill of Rights. And so we have a moral, biblical, ethical, and historical obligation to stand with this country as they are on the front lines in the war with the militant arm of Islam and as the only democracy in the world that leads the way in technology, agriculture, and medicine. So thank you to everyone who sends Hershey's for Heroes. If you don't know about Hershey's for Heroes, please Google or Facebook Hershey's for Heroes and be a participator and not a spectator. God bless you. Happy Thanksgiving. You're going to be listening to this show the Sunday after Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone in the United States and to the American Jews that actually live here in Israel. I am thankful for the freedom that we have been given to worship God and to honor Him. And just one day set aside. As a matter of fact, I am currently here in the capital of the Jewish state, the capital eternal, and that is Jerusalem. It's a kind of a cold day here, but it makes me feel like I'm at home in West Virginia.
It makes us feel at home only because it's Israel.
Exactly, I agree. And Yossi, we're here in Mike's place in Jerusalem. What street is this, actually?
Yafo
Street. In Jerusalem, Mike's place, where they're having, you were showing me this year, they're having their annual Thanksgiving dinner, a three-course traditional meal and wine, which takes this place this Thursday for 128 shekels. That's not bad.
It's the cheapest place, actually, you can find a proper Thanksgiving dinner with, you know, in a restaurant.
And it's kosher.
And it's kosher.
That's great stuff. Great stuff. So if you are in the Jewish state, and this is obviously going to play on Sunday, come to Mike's place. And if you're an American, give thanks. Thank God. We thank God for the United States of America and for the Jewish state. Wow. We thank God for both countries. So come on down to Mike's place, where we're actually doing this recording now, and enjoy Thursday. God bless it. So, Yossi Finkel.
Frankel.
I apologize.
That's good.
Brother, it is good to have you back on Insight to Israel.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back.
And last time we had you on was like a year ago, I think it was.
Correct.
And too long. Because what you do...
Thank God it's too long. In my line of work, I could say it. Thank God it's too long.
No, I agree, brother. I agree. And Yossi, for folks who can't reflect back on a year ago, you worked for a very important organization called Zaka.
Correct.
Could you explain a little bit what Zaka does?
Zaka is the Hebrew acronym for disaster victim identification, and we deal with any unnatural death here in Israel and abroad. We have to date, 56 teams worldwide, over 4,500 volunteers. We volunteer more than 1.8 million hours a year, and it's not only to deal with the unnatural deaths, but also the biggest search and rescue team worldwide under the United Nations. We are the fast medical response here in Israel, as well as missing persons unit and canine unit, divers unit, anything that we could do to help another person out or to save a life, or in the unfortunate matter where we can't save the life, at least we can honor those that have passed on.
Yeah. Now, Yossi, you're a rabbi.
I am.
And you're originally from England.
I am.
When did you make Aliyah?
I made Aliyah 2.5 years ago when I decided that, you know what, it's my turn to give back to my country.
Exactly. Wow. Wow. That's very powerful. You know, it's too bad a lot of the Jews in the United States and in England don't... I thank you, number one, by leading by example.
We try.
And number two, I think this is the best place for all Jews to be, the safest place. Secular, religious, it doesn't matter. If you want to be a Jew, then this is the best place to do it, to live your life.
Everybody is welcome here in Israel. We are a multicultural, multi-faith country,
right,
especially here in Jerusalem, where we have from Christians, Muslims, Druze, Bedouins, you name it. Everybody's welcome.
Right.
We don't discriminate. We don't judge people. We're here to love each other.
Right. And now the key to this is, I'm a big fan of Jewish state. I love saying Jewish state because for 2,000 years you had no homeland. And it's amazing how the world portrays Israel in such a false lying light.
They can portray Israel the way they want. Personally, it doesn't make a difference to me. Israel is my home. Israel is the place to be. And Israel welcomes everybody, and every single one of you that are listening to the show are welcome to come. If not to visit, at least move here.
Nice, nice. Amen. So, and this falls along the lines of what Zaka does. Now, there are, in light of what you said that you do, part of what you do and why you do it is because, unfortunately, when we're going to use this as a case in point, some of the recent Islamic terrorist attacks against the Jewish people have taken place where Jews have been killed, and especially religious Jews. There's a way to handle them.
Correct. I mean, our body itself does not belong to us. Our soul is who we individually are, but our body belongs to God.
Amen.
And
wow.
We don't want to be the ones to go and desecrate God. The same way as the Torah says, the same way we're brought into this world, so to shall we return. And the third reason is because of the fact that man is created in the shadow of God.
Amen.
And it's not just the shadow in reality. I mean, yes, cloud can come above us and, you know, shadow us, but our shadow is actually God. God runs this world, and God decides what goes on.
Right.
Which leads us to last Tuesday morning, exactly a week ago, actually. I remember finishing here at Mike's place, which I'm the part owner. About 5 o'clock in the morning, I got home, did what I had to do. About 6:30, I must have fallen asleep. And by 7 o'clock, my radio was blaring with, you know, the call of the attack that happened. And the first thing that I did right there and then was jumped out of bed, grabbed whatever clothes I had near me, and ran out the house to go and save those lives. Unfortunately, we did not manage to save 4 of them, but we did manage to kill the terrorists as well.
Amen.
It was my worst disaster. Out of 11 years of being in the organization and being all over the world, of major disasters worldwide, and not only worldwide, but here as well in Israel, whether it be from a bombing to the attacks that we've had over the last few months of people being run over by Muslims.
Wow.
Or car accidents, overdose. I've been to many, many, many cases around the world. I can't even count the thousands of cases that I've attended in the 11 years. But one thing I could say is that this
case was the worst I have ever seen. And I've seen some nasty, nasty things in my life.
Yeah, you showed me some of your pictures when we first met.
Correct.
I remember you taking me on your phone and showing me some things, and I was like, wow, wow. I don't know how you do it, brother. I don't know how. Like, it's tough for me to see.
I do it simply for the reason that, you know, it's called in Hebrew Chesed Sharemet, the deed of truth. And the reason why it's called the deed of truth is because when I went out this morning and saved that person, you know, from a heart attack and, you know, did whatever I had to do, CPR, intubation and everything, I know that person can turn around to me in a few days, weeks, months, even years, and turn around and thank me. And I've seen it before. There was an accident on Highway 1, a massive car accident where four people were killed, and one woman, I honestly, when I put her into the ambulance and I was doing CPR, I did not think she was going to make it. 5 years later, I turned around and she is there.
Wow, wow.
She can turn around and thank me. Now, the patient this morning can turn around and thank me, but I promise you one thing. If I go to a call of a person that has passed on and that person turns around and thanks me, I'm going to run the other way. The whole reason that we actually do it is because of the fact that it's the deed of truth, because we do it solely for the fact of doing the deed, not expecting any thank yous. I don't want to thank you.
Right.
That's why we do it.
What was it like for you, Yossi? I can't even imagine, because I want to honor the families, and you know, thankfully, I wouldn't show any faces as far as in that situation. But I saw some pictures that some of the media put up, and I'm sure they're nothing compared to what actually was seen there in the synagogue. What was it like for you when you walked in and saw that?
When I walked in, I remember walking up the stairs, seeing a body strewn on the floor on the right-hand side, right at the entrance to the building, and walking through those doors, I remember seeing very clearly blood, like drag marks of blood all the way up to the synagogue door, the synagogue itself.
Wow, wow, wow.
I walk into the synagogue.
It's heartbreaking.
I take one look and I walked out. It actually reminded me from the pictures that I saw growing up of the Holocaust. People there in the tefillin, in the phylacteries, wrapped around their arms and their head, as a normal prayer service is held, except one of them had his arm amputated, literally sliced off,
wow,
with his tefillin still on, dead. Those other people there in the prayer shawl and phylacteries, lying there also dead, and just going from one to one, it was heartbreaking is an understatement. This is the worst case I have ever seen.
I can't, Yossi, I can't even, my heart sinks. I want to cry. I want to sit here and cry because, I was at 2 weeks ago, the soldier that was stabbed in Tel Aviv. You know, I didn't actually see the soldier. I didn't see the event, but I went and reported on it. And in the ambulance behind me, they had shot the Muslim in the leg that stabbed the soldier, and he was in the ambulance, and they rushed the soldier to the hospital. And the next day, I'm coming to Herzl to his burial in Jerusalem and putting the Hershey's for Heroes on his grave.
Thank you.
I just can't even wrap my mind around it, man. My heart breaks, and I can't imagine seeing that. Are there times that you ever... you ever have sleepless nights when you see these things?
I have many sleepless nights. I mean, even last night I woke up about four times during the night. And it's something which happens on a regular basis. When you deal with disaster, when you deal with the situations that we go through, the flashbacks always come back. And it's difficult, but at the end of the day, I'm determined to continue my mission in saving those that we can save and honoring those that we can't. And, you know, that's my lifelong mission, and I hope to never, ever give it up, no matter what the cases are, no matter how bad the cases are. As an officer, I cannot show my troops that I can't handle it.
Right.
So I have to hold
a stronger
mindset,
right,
just to be able to show them that yes, it's bad, but we could do it.
Right. Wow, wow. Yossi, let me ask you. When you look at how the media portrays these events, because I monitor CNN, the BBC, and you know, the first thing that they the portrayal that they give is the first thing they say is Israeli police shot two Muslims.
Welcome to the media. As I've said once before, if I'm not mistaken, I actually said it on your show, is that the Associated Press and Reuters is actually owned by the Palestinian Authority. It's actually owned
by... Say it again louder.
As far as I recall, Associated Press and the Reuters is actually owned by the Palestinian Authority, and the aspect of it's Yasser Arafat's estate. So I wouldn't put it past them to report it any other way.
Right.
What I was disgusted at was the fact that when things happen within Muslim communities, they show pictures all the time of dead bodies and people lying there dead, you know, and children. Yet when our minister holds up a picture of one of those people killed in his prayer shawl with his phylactery still on his arm, the BBC have the cheek and the nerve to turn around and say, please put that picture down, we don't want to show this. That is not just an insult, that is right out anti-Semitic.
Right.
And for that, I don't stand it. I don't stand for anti-Semitism.
Okay.
I've lived in England, I've lived in the States.
Wow.
Anti-Semitism is all over the place. The best place to be is Israel. You won't. There's no anti-Semitism in that aspect. And we all love each other, and we're all here to help each other.
Right. Right.
To be told by the press different things, you wouldn't expect anything other than that. Unfortunately, in today's day and age, the whole Muslim world are so good at propaganda,
yeah,
that this is one of the things that they do.
How does that make you feel? Is it like, okay, I'm not Jewish, so I have a hard time wrapping my mind around when you look at your own history and how your people have been slaughtered for nothing.
We've been slaughtered, we've been persecuted time and time again, and we will never give up. We will always be here. We will always stay. We're here to stay. We are one community, no matter where Jews are in the world. We all stand by each other.
You know, that's the thing I have to say, that, you know, I've gotten emails from people that say, you think Israel's perfect. And I know you're not, but you get enough stuff in the media. I don't need to show what I've seen here. Yeah, you have, you know, your different internal issues. But at the end of the day, when things like this happen, I have to say there's a unity. During the last operation, especially when thousands of Israeli Jews are coming to the hospital to visit soldiers, thousands that they don't know, and thousands upon thousands show up at the funerals. I have to say, brother, there is a unity here that I have never seen in all the countries that I've been in, even in the United States. And it's quite astonishing.
It is amazing. I mean, the amazing thing here is that it's not just unity amongst Jews, it's also unity amongst minorities.
Right.
For instance, Zaka, we have a minorities unit. We have Muslims, Christians, Jews, Bedouins on our teams. You know, because of the fact that we care.
Right.
And we don't want to get to a scene of a Muslim that has passed on, or a Christian that's passed on, or a Jew or a Bedouin who has passed on in any unnatural death, and have to, you know, and do what we're trained to do without knowing their rules and their religion and to know how they handle it.
Right.
So therefore, we have these minorities units to be able not only to train us, but to work with us.
Wow.
And we all respect each other.
Wow, that's amazing.
I mean, besides for Zaka, and besides for the Jewish people, every single bit of technology that is around the world, including your iPad that you're using, do you know that in Cupertino there are about 150 Israelis that have moved out to Cupertino to work for Apple to be able to develop the technology? Israel is the you know, the best place for medicine, the best place for technology.
Absolutely.
We invent things all the time.
Yeah.
And we're the biggest per capita in invention and technology around the world.
And it's amazing. And the world never acknowledges that. You never get a thank you for the advancements in technology.
The world won't acknowledge it because the world does not want to thank Israel, because they look down on Israel because of the propaganda that the Muslims are giving. So,
right.
You know, why would they look up to us? Why would they thank us?
Well, I want to say thank you.
We appreciate it.
And my listeners want to say thank you.
We really appreciate it.
And, I think that Zaka is doing an amazing job. I see your vehicles everywhere. And,
unfortunately.
It is unfortunate. It is unfortunate. But it's not only in times of death that you're helping people.
We help people no matter what. We help people, whether it be someone that's passed out on the side of the street to call for an ambulance. We are the first responders for the local ambulance service. We go out, we help people. There's a period after death that's called the Shiva. It's the morning service, which lasts a week long. And we supply the chairs for them, the Torah scrolls. We when it came to Tzuk Eitan,
the operation, Protective Edge in Gaza.
We went down there to give spirit to the soldiers. We went down there to give food and to give help and, you know, to be there for them, because we are all one family. That's one thing with Israel, is we are all one family, no matter what background we come from, whether we are Sephardi or Ashkenazi, which is the two different sects in the two different main sects in Judaism. We don't care, we don't discriminate, we're all here for each other. We are one family.
Wow. That's very well said. You know, let me ask you, you're a non-profit organization, correct?
We are non-profit. We are a non-governmental organization.
NGO. So how do you receive your funding?
We receive our funding from people like yourselves, or your listeners, or their parents, no matter, I don't know how old your listeners are.
Or their grandparents.
Or their grandparents. We are solely here as a voluntary basis, but our equipment costs us money. I can tell you that last week, Tuesday, our equipment cost us over $20,000.
Wow.
From the cleanup crew, from the cleanup materials, body bags, the ambulance, the whole place gets spotless. Because we have to collect every single part of that body, whether anything that has blood on it. Because the same way that we're brought into the world, so too shall we return.
Wow.
Do I want to return a person half, in half? No. I want to return them with everything. Whatever belongs to them, whatever has their blood on them, gets buried with them.
Wow. How long did it take you? It's tough for me to ask these questions, but for example, when you went into the synagogue, how long did it take you to...
We started at 7 o'clock. That's when the incident started. And by 1 o'clock, we were ready. I had already closed the scene at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Closing the scene does not mean finishing the case.
Right.
Closing the scene means that we've now cleaned the synagogue. It's now accessible to other people, unless the police want to shut it down
for investigation,
which they actually did for about an hour. But the main cleanup took about an hour. That's getting the bodies out, getting all the remains. And one thing that you should note is that the first people that we took out from the scene were actually the terrorists. We removed them from the scene and took them to the police station so that they can be transferred over to the forensics hospital.
Forensics, okay.
So that way they could do what they have to do. I didn't finish until about 4:30 the next morning.
Wow.
Reason being, we still have to go through all the remains to make sure that it gets buried with the right people.
Right. Wow. I can't. How many people, like, if you go to a scene like that, how many people are actually on a team that help?
I had four teams of four to deal with individual bodies. Then I had an extra about 20 people to deal with the findings. Then I had people at the chapel to deal with the forensics on that end, whether it be receiving the bodies to receiving the findings or the belongings and going through that. If I'm not mistaken, it was about another 20. We must have had over 100 volunteers there. Now, these volunteers did not go to work. They stayed on the scene to deal with it. We stopped work. I did not show up to my bar until about 4:30 in the morning when it was closed. But that's how we work. We don't care about our outside life. We don't care about our livelihood. Our priority is, at that time of that moment of an attack, we are there to help, whether it be the families or whether it be the bodies and the collection of the remains or the rescue.
Now, do you have a like a place, like when you, after you deal with a situation like that, where maybe family members, you had mentioned this earlier, the family members can come and get counseling or anything like that? Or do
we do offer counseling together with the local municipality. Now, 2 days later, we went for a debriefing. We went to see our counselors. Our counselors are set up by the Revacha of the Iria, which is the social services of the municipality, and we were met there by Nir Barkat, who is the mayor of Jerusalem. And the idea of that is to give the support to each other.
Right.
Besides of being on the scene and giving the support on the scene from one to another, we have professional counselors who will come to be able to basically let everything out onto them.
Yeah.
And it's very, very effective, and it's something which needs to be done. And the reason why we do it 2 days later or 3 days later is to see how they develop through the night.
Right.
If they're able to sleep and if they're going through a tough time or if they need to talk to someone, we're here for them. And then we will come up with a group therapy rather than individual therapy.
Basically, you're dealing with the possibility of post-traumatic stress.
Sure. I mean, PTSD is something very common. Thank God we don't suffer from that. In that aspect, we have the help from everybody when it comes to that, especially the municipality.
And you know what, Yossi, I think that I can say with all assurity that God brings peace to those who seek Him and do this kind of work because you need Him. You definitely 100%. Need Him, that's for sure.
100%. And it's unfortunate, but we're here. We're here to stay, you know. Even though we're on the verge of bankruptcy, we're here to stay.
What can someone do? Because we're actually going to post your information for Zaka if someone wants to give to Zaka.
They can give through bank transfer. They could do it on the net. They could give us a check, cash. We accept everything. Any form of payment goes straight to, doesn't go to the organization as in the members. It goes straight to equipment so that we can get more equipment.
And now, is there a tax deduction or something?
Sure.
If you're in Israel?
If you're in Israel or the States.
Or the United States. I think that's very important.
Or England or France.
That's very important for the listeners to know that it's a benefit. We have to take advantage of it while we can.
Sure.
So.
But even if not, even if we weren't tax exempt,
right?
The fact of the matter is that they're saving lives and honoring the dead.
Absolutely.
Equipment costs money.
Absolutely.
Every heart monitor, every ambulance, every bit of every bandage costs money. I mean, the amount of bandages that we used on Tuesday, the amount of different things that we used, it was incredible. It cost us over $20,000.
Wow!
Now talking about shekels, dollars.
Wow.
Times that by 3 and you'll get the shekel.
Yeah, wow. Yossi, I want to say thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
And I think that the listeners, you need to go online. I'm going to post the information online for Zaka. And I hope that someone that's listening will, that God will speak to your heart. And that you'll give to Zaka.
Not that he will. He does.
Absolutely.
He does speak to your heart. And he does tell you to open your hearts and open your wallets and all your checkbooks. And, give. Give to save lives. As the Torah says, anybody that saves a life, it's as though they've saved the whole world.
Wow.
Imagine how many worlds you, as a presenter, can be saving, by getting people to donate to us. I mean, every penny goes to save more people.
Yossi, God bless you. Thank you for being
on the
show. And this is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel and Hershey's for Heroes, and we'll be right back. This is Michael Gano with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving three right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gonneau. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security. And we're back. Wow, that was a great interview with a volunteer from Zaka. And
wait a minute, you're not too cold.
And I really appreciated what Yossi does for Zaka. It's amazing, amazing the work that they do. Now, I'm here. I've done this recording twice, so this is the second time. This is the second half of the show. So now I went from being in Jerusalem to the town that I love, that I live in, Give It Time. And I joke around with folks, and I say, they ask me where I live, and I point to my watch, and I say, Give It Time. And they're like, what? And I say, Give It Time. So anyway, this is a great town. It's another beautiful day in the Jewish state. It's about 7 p.m. I'm here in front of my favorite place, Kofix. And Uri,
my name is Uri.
Uri is here with me. And Uri, could you tell us your last name?
Polak.
Yeah. Okay. And Uri, I met you here at Kofix last night. And I want to say that, you know, Uri and I talked for about 2 hours. And first of all, I want to say thank you, sir, for your service to this country.
You're welcome.
There's, I'm sure, 1,000 other things that you could have been doing with your life. Very interesting conversation, but you chose to serve this country.
And I've done many, many things that I'm not allowed to speak about.
Because of what you were involved with.
The unit that I was a member of, and my duty, my work, my function. But if you, I can generally speak about it. Again, I was born in Israel. I'm almost 41 years old. I joined the army at the age of almost 18. And I joined a commando unit that is called the Nibu Sayeret Matkal.
Sayeret Matkal.
Sayeret Matkal. Sayeret Matkal, which is the number one commando unit in Israel in the IDF.
Wow.
Which is, it belongs to the chief of staff and to the headquarters of the staff, the general.
And the current chief of staff is Benny Gantz.
Yeah, and he is the Ramatkal in Hebrew. And okay. We are Sayeret Matkal. So we actually get the orders directly from him, from the chief of staff, and from his members of the staff, the general.
Wow. Wow.
Understand, it's important work.
Now, in your unit, there were some pretty famous Israelis that were in. What were some of the?
Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister.
Benjamin Netanyahu, wow.
Benjamin Netanyahu, his brother, late brother, Yonatan Netanyahu, which was killed in Entebbe.
Ken, I want to give a little background on that. Yonatan Netanyahu, actually, I have to say, is one of my heroes. And when I watched it, I would recommend to the listeners finding on YouTube a video called Follow Me. It is a documentary on the life of Yonatan Netanyahu. Yoni had a four-year scholarship to Harvard.
Yeah, he learned over there. Yeah, he studied over there.
He had already served on his time in the army, and when he saw what Israel was going through as far as conflict and stuff with the Muslims, countries in around you, he wrote in one of his letters, I have to go back, and he forfeited.
He came back for the 6 days war in 67. He
wow.
Came back, he left his studies in Harvard. I think he was studying law or something, and he came back for the war. It is the 67 Six Days War.
And he was the main.
Afterwards, he was the commander of my unit.
Wow.
When he was killed in Entebbe in the operation, which is called now Yonatan Operation, after him.
Wow.
At Entebbe Operation. Yonatan Operation. He was the commander of my unit.
And
they released the hostages in Entebbe Airport, if you remember.
Ken.
There were 120 Israeli and Jewish hostages over there, kept by terrorists of the Fatah and Baader-Meinhof, the Germans. And my unit released them over there, and he was killed during the operation. It was in 76.
He was the only... Actually, let me give a little background about that, because it goes along with what we're about to talk about concerning what you've done in the IDF. For the listeners, the raid at Entebbe was where Fatah and the
Baader-Meinhof, two Germans were over there also from the Baader-Meinhof, the commander of the terrorists and his deputy, a woman, was his girlfriend also.
Yeah.
They were killed also.
So these Muslims and then some Germans took this French airline. They released. They went to Uganda.
They kidnapped an airplane.
Yeah,
a French airplane, Air France, which was leaving Israel to Paris. They kidnapped them,
and they flew it to Uganda. They released all the non-Jewish prisoners, kept all the Jewish prisoners, and then
Israelis and Jewish. Yeah, most of them were Israelis.
And then wanted a release of Palestinian terrorists
out of
the Israeli prisons.
PLO terrorists, yeah.
And the one thing that I really respect is the fact that, you know, the government was not going to negotiate. And then Yoni originated the plan to rescue these hostages. And he was the only soldier that died. There was an elderly woman that was sick and taken to the hospital.
This is Dora Bloch. Yeah, I know all about this operation because we learned it in the unit. You know,
during
my service.
And so as soon as you're...
And another young hostage was killed, a French guy named Jean-Jacques Maimoni.
Okay.
A Jewish guy, French guy. He was killed also.
Wow.
During the release of the hostage.
And so, I don't remember the guy's name that was the dictator in Uganda.
Idi Amin Dada?
Idi Amin, that's right.
He helped them, the terrorists, yeah.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, he actually killed that elderly lady.
Yeah, Dora Bloch, Mrs. Dora Bloch. He sent his officers, his soldiers, to kill her in the hospital.
Wow.
She was hospitalized in the Kampala, in the capital city of Uganda. She was sick.
Wow.
And after the operation, he sent his soldiers to kill her in hospital.
Sad, very sad.
She was a very old woman, 76 or 77 years old.
So thank God for your unit. Thank God for Yoni. And thank God for you, sir. And I say that because I can't imagine what was it like for you as an 18-year-old that...
First of all, I grew up on the stories like this, like the operation, raid operation, Yoni, Yonatan. And I was a small child when it happened, of course. I was born in 73. But I learned about it, I read books. And when I joined the army, I wanted to serve in this unit. And I did all my best to be over there. And I succeeded.
Wow.
I wanted to dominate as much as I can for the country, for the IDF, and to do meaning things.
Wow, that's amazing you set that goal, because I see that in a lot of soldiers. But I talk to a lot of young people that before they go in the army, I'm like, what do you want to do? I want to be in Golani or Gabati or...
Paratroopers.
Gan or paratroopers.
All the commando units, the special units. Yeah.
And I've seen these young people train with groups of a friend of mine, Roy Pellet, runs an organization. He was in... And I apologize, I don't know why I can't remember now. He was in Duve Divan.
He's a commando unit, special unit. Yeah.
So he now runs an organization called Expert Security, and they train these young men and women that know exactly what they want to do long before they go in the army. And it's amazing to see the dedication.
Yeah, the motivation. He joined the army with a lot of motivation to even give our lives for the country, for the people of Israel, to defend the country.
Yeah.
Because my father, my late father and my mother were the Holocaust. And we grew up on the history, the stories from the concentration camps. My grandfather was killed. The father of my father was murdered by the Nazis in the camp.
Wow.
We grew up on the stories that we can never allow it to happen again to the Jewish people, and especially to the Israel country, the state of Israel. So we have to defend it, and to defend the people, the nation, and the people here.
You know, that's so hard for me as an American. I've never had to go through anything. We're pretty much close to being the same age.
Yeah.
And to hear you say that to me, and in our discussion last night, I walked away, and I have to tell you that I can't wrap my mind around it. It's tough. It's tough. And I can't imagine what it was like for you growing up hearing all these stories about your people and their suffering.
We learn about it at school also. We've seen films, movies, we read the books, but mostly the atmosphere at home, you know, with my family, you know, the nightmares of my father,
wow,
my mother, the crying, the fear. And the most important thing, the fact that we must defend Israel and we must defend the people here. Because it never happen again. And you know that many times, a few times, the countries surrounding Israel were about to do it. They wanted to finish Israel. They wanted to destroy Israel, to throw the people to the sea, you know, to the Mediterranean Sea. They told them.
Yeah.
They told it in the radio, in the television, this was the plan.
And they still say it today.
To throw us to the water, to the sea. Yeah.
They still say it today, and the crazy thing is, I offer no justification. I don't give people that much credit for ignorance. I don't let them have the credit for being ignorant. I think that's giving them an out. And when I see it in the media, in the Muslim media all over the Middle East, on the internet, in the media in Europe, I, even though I wasn't born and raised here, I feel that same urgency. And wow, that's amazing. So
we live in this situation I was born in 73, but from the 1948, from the independence war, you know, which my father fought and wounded very badly in that war,
yeah,
in 49.
Wow.
He almost died. Imagine, he came from the Holocaust, survived the Holocaust, lost his father over there, and almost died here in battle, in combat, in 49,
wow,
for the independence of Israel.
You know, you were telling me, you've never been married.
No.
And you were telling me last night, you were sharing, like, every holiday.
Like I'm married to the country and to the IDF instead.
Every holiday you were working.
Yeah.
What's it been like to see these young people come through the military over the years?
Yeah, maybe we'll now forget the politics and come back to the IDF.
Ken.
To my serving. We had a lot of operations, which I told you I'm not allowed to speak about.
Right.
Some of them were famous. Some of them were, you know, in the media, abroad, were discussed, and people tell that maybe Israel done this and Israel done that, and the IDF did it. But we are not talking about nothing. I can tell you that I've traveled around the Middle East during my service, all around. You know, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Iran, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, whatever, the Emirates, Egypt. And we've done mostly intelligence, but also other operations for the favor of Israel, for the defense of Israel.
Let me ask you on a personal level.
And about the people who are coming, the young people who are coming,
Ken,
joining the army, I think they're very good material. They have a high motivation. They are maybe better than my generation.
Really?
Yeah, they're smarter, they're more sophisticated, you know, computers and internet and iPad and iPhone and whatever. Now they have the GPS, they have the
night vision goggles.
Yeah, we didn't have it.
Wow.
We have a small computer.
Yeah.
And maps and compass, and that's where all the
Well, I'll tell you, with you know, you've heard of EMP.
For navigating, you know.
EMP, electromagnetic pulse. I mean, if there's some Muslim countries that have it, if they ever use it, you'll be right back to using the compass and the map. We'll need guys like you.
Yeah, we have the knowledge for it, yeah.
And yeah. Because I think too many times we rely on technology instead of wit and skill and intuition.
Yeah.
And
which is my generation. We had it.
Right.
But don't worry, we have a lot of veterans here and many officers who are still in the army as serving or as
in the reserves. Miluim.
Yeah, for my generation.
Yeah.
So they know about the compass, they're navigating, the intuition.
I wish I did.
Combat, you know, face to face, which is not so popular nowadays. Everything is technology and electronics. And
so let me ask you on a personal level. Whenever you would have to go on a mission or go and gather intelligence, whatever you had to do, you're Jewish and you're in these countries that how do you process that? When you know that all around you, your life could be, they'll kill you.
We are surrounded by 21 Arab countries, even when we are talking now here in the center of Givatayim, which is not far away. The border is not far away.
No, there's
not
war going south. On not too far from here, 4 hours.
In the north, in the south, and in the center. A few kilometers, 100, 200 kilometers from now, from our place, our position. So when we are going abroad, you know the risk.
Yeah.
You are psychologically ready, and what can happen? You can be killed, be injured like I was,
right?
Or be taken prisoner, which is I think the worst thing that can happen to an Israeli soldier or an officer,
right?
If you get imprisoned by the Hamas or Hezbollah or Daesh or whatever, you know, because
Daesh would be ISIS.
Yeah.
In English.
Yeah, which is investigating you and torturing you and maybe killing you, and it happened. It happened to Israeli soldiers and officers.
How did you deal with those things psychologically, emotionally? You know, when you've gone on a mission, you've come back and you're like you got through it.
You're never sure that you will come back.
Right.
Well, I'm not sure that I will come back.
Right.
Never. You should be very cool, logical, not giving your senses or emotions control you.
That's a tough thing for a lot of people.
Yeah. You should let your logic and rational thinking control the emotions and the fear and the panic, even when you get surrounded by Arabs, by Muslims.
Now, when you would come back, would you ever...
God, I came back all the time.
Exactly.
Once I got back on a helicopter to hospital, to Rambam Hospital in Haifa, but at least I came back alive.
Yeah. Was there ever a time, like, your first mission, I mean, was there ever, like, even after your first time, you came back and you're like, oh, I made it. I don't want to do that again.
Yeah, it's like when you are, you know, we jump from planes.
Yeah.
We had to do all the cruises, paratroopers and everything. The first time is so scaring that you say, I won't do it again. But the second time is less scary.
Right.
You feel more comfortable, more
confident.
Used to it, confident, you know what to do because you've been through it once. And the same thing in each operation, which is different, you know, not exactly the same operation.
Of course,
we in the unit, like you said about Yoni Netanyahu, use a lot of imagination, a lot of intuition, a lot of trying to find things which are not common, not known, you know, all kinds of things, sophisticated things to do the operation.
Now, you've jumped out of here?
To invent all kinds of tactics and strategies which are not known to anybody.
Right. Now you jumped out of an airplane, so you're
three times.
Just three times.
And then four times during the night, three times during the day.
Wow.
And one night jump, which is the hardest one. You don't see nothing.
Right? Yeah. Wow. Now, were any of those jumps halo jumps? You know, high altitude.
No. They're from the about 1 kilometer with a parachute.
Now would you be considered a paratrooper? Because you jumped out of a plane and survived?
I had the wings of the parachute.
Now, do you know how to scuba dive? Did they teach you all that stuff?
No, we made a course which was 21 days, including three jumps during the day, the last jump during the night, and we got the wings. We had to do it. In the unit, you have to do it.
Why?
So, and that's all. And it was a long time ago when I was 20 years old. 21 years from now.
And at that age, you don't think about much. You just want to do it.
No, it's an experience.
Yeah.
How
many guys joined up with your, wanted to actually get in with your regiment, and then how many guys didn't make it compared to the guys?
Many. When we were training in the beginning, and the commander of us had to select one from five.
Wow.
20%. So if we were 100 guys, only 20 got to the unit.
Wow.
And actually, at the end of the service, we were only 15 years in my crew. We were a crew, not regiment and platoons.
Okay.
Small crew of 15 people.
Wow.
That was it.
Are you still friends with these guys to this day? Because there is a big unity here. Usually the friends you're making...
I can tell you that some of them are famous. You told me about, I told you, you asked me who, Benjamin Netanyahu and Yonatan Netanyahu. They are much older than me. But we had in my unit Avi Dichter, which was the head of the security service here. He was a minister. We had Naftali Bennett in my unit.
Ah, wow.
Minister. Yeah, he was an officer.
Wow.
An officer.
I really respect that guy.
Yeah, and... we had another one which was a member of the Knesset from the Avodah, the Labour Party, and I don't remember his name now, maybe it will come to me. One was killed, unfortunately he was killed. And we are still in connection, we had meetings from the unit every few years, you know, every some years we have a meeting, we have a party in the beach or in some mountain in the Judea mountains.
Nice.
Near Jerusalem. We had beers and we had, you know, fun, and most of the people got families, so they're bringing their wife and the kids. And
wow.
Yeah, it's, we're like a family. The crew, they actually crew like a family.
Nice. In your time during your time in the Army, 22 years, that's a long time. 22 years, am I correct?
But I went to study in the university for 3 years.
Okay.
So I left the Army for 3 years. I was a student. When I finished my BA, my degree, I came back.
What did you get your degree in?
It was
art?
State and how do you say it in English? How do you say chevra in English? Not company, chevra, which is like state and a social degree, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
And
you never used it. I mean, did you use it? I mean, did you feel like you used it when you went back in the Army?
I used it for having another rank, for getting a rank. Yeah, from lieutenant to captain. You have to be an academic, you know, to have a BA in my unit, to have the captain, to get the captain degree, the rank. So many people are going out to learn whatever.
And then they come back.
They come back and they get a degree.
Nice.
So afterwards, when I was an intelligence officer, I learned psychology also. Because you have to know psychology to be an intelligence officer.
Right.
And I learned it in the university also. Not a BA, not a degree, but, you know, I learned for 2 years.
Wow. So when you... So you were out of the Army, then you re-signed back up? Did they know you were coming?
Yeah, because the army paid for my first studies.
Wow. You know, it's amazing.
This is the deal. They pay for your studies, and then you come back.
It's amazing because up in the Golan Heights, there is a special school for young boys. Many of them come from Judea and Samaria, Judea and the Efrat area, where a lot of your strongest fighters come from.
Most of them are religious, you know. They're having a kippah on their head.
It's amazing. These young boys passed a test, a special test, long before they're in high school, age around 13 and up. And they are taking computer science, electronics, all this stuff.
It's an academy, pre-army academy. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
we have something like this in Israel. Maybe 10 or 20.
It's amazing how, at that age, your government, your military is thinking ahead for the future all the time, staying a step ahead. I mean, I've only heard about weapons that you have that you haven't even brought out that are in existence until the right time that you feel like you need to use them. And that shows the greatness of the people here.
These are some of the secrets and the things that we are not allowed to speak about. I know about many weapons or plans which Israel keeps close to the chest,
close to the heart,
till the right moment to use it.
Right. Wow.
To use some of this.
Okay.
Some of it. I don't think that we'll use everything, but the commanders and the generals will decide what to use in the right time and for the right purpose. Of course.
God bless them. Especially when you look now at the threat that has taken place from ISIS, Daesh.
Don't forget Iran with nuclear weapons. And don't forget maybe Pakistan with the nuclear weapons.
Right.
Don't forget Turkey, which is an Islamic big country. They have a big army.
Do you think Iran will get a nuke? I am definitely of the strong opinion they will. The West is doing nothing.
Yeah.
And
we are coming back to politics, which I'm allowed now to speak because I'm not in the army. But when I was in the army, I wasn't allowed to speak about politics. Nothing, not a word. But I think that the West is not doing enough to preventing Iran. It didn't prevent Pakistan.
And in turn, I think what it'll create is it'll create an arms race.
Nuclear arms race in the Middle East. We have more countries who are willing to have a nuclear bomb, a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
Egypt, Saudi Arabia, maybe even Qatar. They want to have a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, wow.
And they shouldn't have.
I tell you, they shouldn't. That's for sure.
Hey,
I'm hoping that my mother's praying every day. I know she is. That God keeps them from getting a nuclear weapon because their son's here for nothing else.
My mother used to pray, my late father used to pray. My mother is sick now, she cannot pray. But we pray here that, and we're doing, you know, in the Jewish belief, we say you cannot depend only on God,
right,
on your praise. You should do.
Right.
You should make your best. You should do your best, think the best, and then if you're doing the right thing, God will help you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is the main thing in the Jewish belief.
Absolutely. Wow. That's great. You know, I'll tell you, we have about a minute and a half left, and I'm going to have you back on the show again because I think when you shared with me about your family history and you kind of talked about it briefly, it's amazing what, you know, like I said, we're pretty close to being the same age. To hear what your family went through and what they survived and what made them stronger and what they throughout their life had to deal with, even in their heart and their mind after the fact, is quite amazing to me.
By the way, Michael, it's not only my family. Many, many families in Israel, many people, most of them are not with us anymore. They were too old and they're dead now. But I knew many families like this, Holocaust survivors, many people who are living in Israel still are living right now.
Uri, listen, God bless you. God bless you, sir.
God bless you.
It's wow, and I thank you for that insight. Listen, for those listening, we're going to have Uri back on the show again, because it's very important for Americans and whoever else is listening to the show that we stand with this country. This is the last stronghold and the only democracy in the Middle East. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel and Hershey's for Heroes. God bless the patriot conservatives that stand for the Judeo-Christian founded Constitution and Bill of Rights. And God bless Israel in her fight for sovereignty and security. This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel.